is a lie. It hides the truth. Beyond the neon lights lurk dark shadows that feed on those that stray too close. In the heart of Tokyo walk creatures never mentioned in the guidebooks. Creatures that need the blood of the living. From Shinjuku to Shibuya, the undead are the hidden power that control this city. Learn the hidden truth in this narrative podcast by independent author Brent Thomas. Learn the hidden truth of Bloody Tokyo. Every city has its own pulse, its own rhythm. Listen closely and you can hear it. Some merely offer a languid, leisurely beat that barely motivates its people to keep breathing. Other cities offer a staccato snare drum of efficiency, marching its citizens along their productive way. But then there are the cities that have grown past the point of one rhythm, a city so large that it competes with itself. The pockets of humanity threaten to overrun the natural rhythms. The sweet harmony of the city has been replaced by the many bubbles of cancerous growth. Tokyo doesn't have a rhythm. It has dozens. There's that steady waltz of commerce in Ginza, that modern disco thump of Shibuya. In Asakusa, you can feel the hold of the old rhythms of ancient Japan competing with the surrounding base of change. In Shinjuku, there's cacophony, the constant struggle of one pocket trying to push out the other. On the northern edges, there's the desperate clunk of forgotten industry that most barely care about. Closer to the main station, the erotic twirl of Kabukicho strives against the constant dance that is Nichome. In the day, Shinjuku offers the hope of motion and success. The finest universities in the nation, businesses with higher operating budgets than many of the neighboring countries. And though the skyline is one of glass and steel, parks offer fields of green and trees thick enough to block out the noise of the city, if only for an hour or two at a time. For one of the densest cities in the world, finding a quiet moment can be easier than you'd think. But every night, people flock to the most crowded areas of this city within a city. They dance and writhe. They work and struggle. They swear at missed trains and drink too much. They flirt in the streets and fuck in the rooms rented by the hour. They lie to spouses about having to work late so they can watch the shows put on by others long robbed of hope. The later it gets, the more the cacophonous rhythm of the city prompts those within to put their inhibitions aside. Those actively prowling the streets after 10 p.m. are those looking for some form of hedonistic release. They drink deep and let good judgment take the night off. That those who strike the most respectable poses during the day are the same looking to transgress during the evenings should come as no surprise. With barely any searching, we can find a couple that fits the description nicely. Both belong to globally recognized electronics firms. Both are graduates from what is considered the most prestigious and most well-connected university. He's been with the company for a little over 3 years now. She just started. Since 7 that evening, they've been attending a series of office parties. At each stage, the number of attendees shrink, the amount of alcohol increases, and the conversation grows more intimate. After the third party, most of their colleagues start to crawl back to home. He holds her back. He tells her he wants to give her some feedback. It's a lie, and she knows it. For the last 2 hours, his gaze has been drifting to her chest for longer and longer amounts of time. For the last 30 minutes at the karaoke box, his hand casually drifted to her thigh. When his fingers dangled to that warm inside portion, she made no motion to stop him. They started talking about work there on the street corner. He checked his watch. She did the same. They could still make the last train if they hurried. She started talking about their shared university, even though they'd talked several times about it, their clubs. She asked again which one he was in. He had played rugby and still had the athletic build. He smiled as he again told her. His eyes drifted down again to her pillowy skin being held in check by lace. He imagined what color her nipples might be. He made a joke. She laughed and put her hand on his arm. His bicep felt strong. He had a nice smile. She wondered what his cock would taste like. They started walking towards the station. At this pace, they should miss the last train by about 5 minutes. They talk about catching a taxi, but that would be too expensive. Might as well find an all-night shop, or just go to a 24-hour McDonald's and wait for the first train tomorrow. But they were both tired. They could just find a cheap hotel. That way they could get more comfortable and sleep a little. And it'd be nice to shower and wash away the cigarette smell. The night proceeded in that order. As they walked along, they got closer and closer. Soon his hand was draped around her waist. When her hand snaked its way into his back pocket, he crept up to caress a tit. They arrived at a love hotel. The no vacancy sign was lit. "There's another place a block over," he whispered in her ear as he gave her tit another squeeze. She let out a soft moan. "I can't wait," she told him. She pulled him by the hand deeper into the alley, to the far side of a vending machine. There, they were hidden in their own little secret pool of darkness. "What are you?" he started to ask, but she cut him off with a soft shh, and by unzipping his trousers. He smiled, anticipating what was soon to come. She squatted down in front of him. "Excuse me," a voice called out. The couple jumped, and the woman struggled to find her balance and stand. A few steps away was a man. The best description either one of the couple could later give of him was ordinary. He was average height and had a typical round haircut. He had black hair and dark eyes. His skin was pale, but that was true of so many of the office workers. He wore black slacks and a long black shirt. He was just normal. "What?" the former rugby player eventually asked. There was a bit of anger in his voice. He wasn't sure if he would be able to recreate the mood. "If this geek cost me a blowjob," he thought. But he wasn't sure where to go from there. The stranger was a head shorter than him. He didn't want to bully the guy. Besides, there had been several reports recently of crazy people going on stabbing rampages. Why risk angering a dweeb that he might be carrying a knife and looking for an excuse? "You shouldn't be here," the stranger said. "You should move along." The woman looked between the two men. She wasn't sure what she wanted her co-worker to do. Part of her wanted to see him in action. He looked powerful enough to simply crush the intruder. She hadn't seen a fight since junior high school, and that was only a scuffle. She kind of wanted to see one now, but that would be stupid. They were heading to the hotel anyway. They could just wait. And there was something unsettling about the stranger. "You should move along," he repeated. "I'm sure you have better things to do." The words were said politely, maybe too politely. The rugby player felt a flower of rage begin to blossom. "What do you mean by that?" "Nothing. This is a dirty street. I'm sure you can have a better time elsewhere." "A better time? Are you trying to insult my co-worker?" The rugby player could feel the bitter taste of anger. He stood up straight and pointed at the new guy, letting his thick arm cover the distance between them. "Why don't you get out of here, huh?" He gave the "huh" a little punctuation by shoving the smaller man. In return, the smaller man rolled his eyes. He then swatted away the bigger man's hand. It was a casual gesture, but the rugby player's arm snapped back, and before he could recover, a cold hand was clamped around his neck. The hand squeezed, cutting the air supply. The rugby player tried punching the arm, holding him to break the grip, but he couldn't even cause the grip to tremble. The stranger had undergone some kind of transformation. The dark eyes had gone even darker, almost black. The skin looked even paler, close to polished marble. And there was a gaunt intensity to the face that made it look sharper. "You are so lucky," the stranger hissed at the couple. "If you took that tone with me in my own territory, you'd be begging for death. And if I felt generous, I'd grant it to you. But here, I'll just repeat that you should leave. Understand?" The big man just choked out something unintelligible. "We'll leave," said the woman. "Let him go, please." The vice-like hand released its pressure, and the big man dropped, only to quickly scurry away from the stranger. The woman helped him up, and together, they escaped back the way they came. Was that wise, Shinichi? From the shadows, another figure came forward. He was a little taller, with close-cropped hair. He was also a little rounder, both in the face and in the middle. They were drunk. Anyone they tell will just think it's alcohol talking, and I won't have left much of a mark. You could have just killed them, true Yamagata-san. But this is your territory, not a true hunting ground, and I've come to ask a favor. Besides, today's youth need to find somewhere more romantic. Yamagata laughed, but not for the reasons Shinichi imagined. Shinichi was at an age where he thought the youth of today were less than those of his youthful years. But Yamagata had been around a much longer time. He could remember when fucking in alleys was considered a rite of manhood. What is your favor? Yamagata asked. I want to create a child. Oh. Yamagata sucked the air through his teeth. That is quite a request. I know. Shinichi waited. There would be a price. He just had to wait for it to be named. There are so many of us here in this city. I'll need to think on it, if you don't mind waiting. Take your time. Let's meet again, next week. I look forward to it. Shinichi's voice remained even as his mind raced, unpacking the layers of meaning. Yamagata was a crafty old bird, and he also had his share of enemies. Or, if not out-and-out enemies, at least there were many that the old man didn't like. And it sounded like in order to get permission to make a child, one of those enemies would need to be put down. A simple request, but a complex solution. After all, theirs was a world of alliances and treaties, of debts old and new. Killing one would certainly earn the wrath of others. Would it be worth it? Perhaps. He would need to think on it. And thinking was best done on a full stomach. Before long, he was back in his own territory. The crowds were thinner, but there was still plenty to choose from. Shinichi closed his eyes and inhaled. Through the haze of alcohol and perfume, he could smell the blood. It was everywhere. It was the true pulse of the city. Shinichi watched for something, someone, to whet his appetite. He was in the mood for something young. He thought of the girl from earlier. She would have been perfect. But there were plenty like her on a night like tonight. After all, this was Tokyo, one of the densest cities in the world. His city. And if every night a few lost souls disappeared, who would notice? Brent Thomas, liking the Brent Thomas author page on Facebook, and by visiting deadlytroubadour.com.